Good morning. Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's May 23rd, 2020, live, to be rebroadcast Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. Yeah. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine while live, you can comment below on Facebook Live. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. And I admit, I keep saying Instagram, and I don't use my Instagram a lot. Twitter, we definitely post the shows on Twitter, so you can see us there. And then Facebook, we also post the shows there. Anyway, so, you know, you could look at those things too, but that's also a good way to access me. You can ask me questions, and I'll answer them either directly or on the show. So I encourage you to reach out. Okay, the views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. All right, so here's more on the coronavirus, of course. So today I wanted to report on some of the great meta-analysis done by Chris Masterjohn, PhD. And so he's a nutritionist, and a lot of us are following his work. He graduated with a degree in nutrition. He got his PhD in nutrition at UConn, so he's a local boy. Well, he went to school locally. And so I'm getting a lot of updates from him, and he's doing great meta-analysis. Do you know what meta-analysis is?
I don't.
All right. What is that? Meta-analysis is a sort of research where you basically review the research. Other people do the research. Hey, good morning, Paula. So you do the research. So other people do the research, and then you review all the research, and you put it together, and you assemble it, and you say, okay, this study said this, but that study said that, and there were three studies that said this thing. And so he is bunkered down in Brooklyn, New York, and not Connecticut, but Brooklyn, New York, and he's bunkered down there, and he's reading everything, and then he's putting it together, and he's got a great mind for analyzing the data, so I'm very, very grateful to him. And if I can figure out a way to get hold of him and get him on the air, we still have to figure out how to pipe somebody in, you know, to call in this format. So once we get that done, we'll start having guests, right?
Yes, okay. We will.
All right. So anyway.
We got a ways to go because I'm...
So here's what I wanted to talk about. One of his updates talked about hypertension, diabetes, and obesity all being strongly related to the severity of COVID-19 outcomes. It seems to involve COVID-19 involves a lot of systemic clotting as a major driver of severe outcomes. So a lot of the severe outcomes are it's because of the blood clotting that it causes. They think that the blood clotting is caused by the cytokine storm. It's not entirely clear why there's so much clotting, and that's still being looked into. But we assume, the first thing you assume is that when you have a an illness that causes such a severe inflammatory response, you assume that it's part of the cytokine storm that's causing the hypercoagulability, making you more likely to clot. When you have a lot of inflammation, you are more likely to clot. And so we assume that that's part of what's going on. What we don't know is if people who are getting severe clotting, if people who are getting severe clotting are... also have a predisposing condition. They certainly, some of the people who are getting severe clotting have things already going on that make them hypercoagulable, like hypertension, like cardiovascular disease, like inflammation from other sources, like autoimmune conditions. They may also have a genetic predisposition towards clotting. They could have, they could have factor five. There's other clotting disorders, genetic clotting disorders that they might have. So we don't know this yet because, you know, when somebody's in the hospital and they have severe COVID to the point that they're clotting and the clotting is life-threatening, they're not doing genetic testing on them to find out if they have genetic predispositions. I'm guessing that at some point they will. There's a new preprint of an article that came out on May 12th that suggested that pre-existing conditions predisposed to clotting-driven COVID-19 severity, the pre-existing conditions being hypertension, diabetes, and obesity, by contributing to leaky blood vessels. Very interesting. So let me explain what that means. So the inner lining, and I'm going to paraphrase what Dr. Masterjohn said. But anyway, the inner lining of your blood vessels is called the endothelium. That's the, so, you know, your blood vessels are a tube. They're a cylinder. And so obviously they're a tube that blood flows through. So you have the outer covering, and then you have the inner lining where the blood, which the blood flows against and through. All right. So the covering there is called the endothelium. On your skin, this layer that you're seeing, this is my arm. And so what you're seeing right on top there is called the epithelium. And because epi means that it's on top. Endo means it's inside. So it's the lining that covers the inside of the blood vessel. And it's the same type of cell. It's squamous epithelium. But it's not epithelium, it's endothelium, because it's inside. All right, so the endothelial cells are joined together by junction proteins, and the proteins prevent passages of substances between the cells. So the endothelial cells themselves control inflow and outflow of substances inside and outside of the blood vessels. And so this is similar to glutamine in the intestines. So in your intestines, you know how we talk about leaky gut in the intestines. So in your intestines, if you have enough inflammation, you're going to have breaches in the intestinal lining. And what happens is, the villi, those are the finger, I can now, because I'm on Facebook Live, I can show you my fingers. I can't do that when I'm just on the radio.
Right.
So the finger-like projections that are, that line your small intestine, they're supposed to be joined together like this. And I apologize if you're listening on Wednesday when there's no video.
What
but Brandon's anyway,
doing, holding all of her fingers together for those who are listening.
I am. Right. And so these fingers are held together by glutamine. And then glutamine is a very important nutrient that holds your the lining of your intestines together. And if this lining becomes breached, and usually by inflammation, then you have less tight junctions between those villi, and stuff can get in, and you can absorb things that you're not supposed to absorb, like bacterial toxins or toxins that were designated for excretion, or antibodies, autoimmune compounds that are not supposed to go into your blood. Anyway, so you can get leaky blood vessels too. So this is really interesting. So what happens, so how it happens is blood vessels aren't perfectly tight, just like in your small intestine, the villi are not perfectly tight. They're supposed to be held together well by glutamine. In your blood vessels, they're not going to be perfectly tight because there has to be some elasticity to your blood vessel walls, and because your blood vessels are pumping. If they're arteries, they're actually pulsating. And if they're veins, they're actually carrying your blood vessels, being assisted by gates and muscles to get back up to your heart. So LDL particles, which are low-density lipoprotein, that's the part of your cholesterol, that's the protein that carries cholesterol from your liver to the rest of your body for use. And so LDL particles can get in between the endothelial cells. So what happens is if enough LDL gets through, do you realize that when you get a plaque, when you get atherosclerosis, that's hardening of the arteries, and you get those plaques that block your arteries, it's not sitting outside like you think that if your artery is blocked, it's because there's this piece of plaque that's collecting right in the surface. Like if you were to look inside the artery, you'd see this blob. That's not how it works. We wouldn't see a blob. You'd see a bump unless it's very severe, and then you might start to see a blob. So how initial atherosclerosis happens is you have some porosity of that endothelium, and it opens up and LDL gets inside. LDL is like 21 nanometers wide, so it easily gets through into those cells. The bigger your LDL particles are, the harder it is to get between those cells. So you want big puffy LDL so it doesn't get inside there. Well, SARS-CoV virion is 82 nanometers wide. So here's the deal. It's like it's four times bigger than your average LDL particle. So how permeable your endothelium is will govern in part how well how well LDL will get in and give you atherosclerosis, which develops underneath the endothelium. So it's like when you start developing atherosclerosis, like I said, you have a bump and it's underneath the endothelium. It's not sitting out on the surface. It will only do that if you have severe atherosclerosis and it finally breaks the endothelium, and then you do actually start to see plaque blocking the actual lumen of the artery. All right, so when you're talking about SARS-CoV, if you have variations in your endothelial permeability, it's going to be easier for the virions, which is one viral particle, to get inside the endothelium and get underneath there where the LDL goes. Like I said, it's harder for a SARS virion to get in there than it is for an LDL particle because it's bigger. So how does it get in there? So underneath the endothelial cells are these cells called pericytes. There are also vascular smooth muscle cells. And so when you're talking about an artery, the vascular smooth muscle cells are the cells that pulsate and escort blood through your body, going away from your heart, wherever they are in your body. And so these pericytes provide mechanical support as well as the smooth muscle cells, and they contribute to how dilated or constricted the blood vessels are. There are other cells that are underneath the endothelium, like fibroblasts, which lay down collagen-rich tissue, and also macrophages, which are big blood cells that clean up junk. Actually, they come from your blood. When they're in your blood, they're monocytes, and when they leave your blood to go do the work of cleaning up garbage, they're called macrophages. So there's macrophages under the endothelium as well, and they are nonspecific cells that clean up junk, whatever it happens to be, as opposed to a lymphocyte that can get encoded to go after a specific virion or bacteria. And that's what you call an antibody. All right. So when your blood vessels are in a healthful state, the blood mainly only comes in contact with endothelial cells, and that's what you want. When you have high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity, the endothelial junctions become compromised and blood more easily reaches the cells behind the endothelium. So what you want nice, smooth, even endothelium that's not breached. And so how do you keep your endothelium from being breached? Well, we're going to talk about some specific ways. There's some important things you do. That's what you want. You want to have nice, elastic endothelium, and you want it not to be particularly porous. You don't want LDL to be able to get through, and you certainly don't want SARS-CoV to get through, because that's when you start having problems. So there was a mouse study that showed that if the coronavirus was able to get through the endothelium and damage the pericytes, those are the cells that control the permeability and elasticity of the blood vessels, you're more likely to have clotting. And you're simply getting clotting because you have breached endothelium. And so your body, so the pericytes are not, the viruses are getting in there, they're damaging the pericytes. Pericytes are not as able to maintain the elasticity. And now you have porous endothelium. So now the viruses get in and your body wants to repair it. So what does it do? It goes to clot it. That's what it does. And so that's one of the mechanisms of clotting. And that's going to happen. It's going to be more likely to happen if you have a genetic predisposition towards clotting. And it's also going to happen simply if you have breached endothelium, regardless of whether you have a predisposition to clotting. If you are predisposed to clotting anyway, genetically, it's going to be more likely to happen. When you have chronic inflammation for any reason, whether you have an autoimmune condition, if you have, for example, antiphospholipid syndrome, or if you have lupus, or if you're just inflamed for any reason, if you have a chronic illness of some other kind, if you have hypertension, hypertension usually precedes some kind of inflammation. And also if you have diabetes unfortunately causes chronic inflammation. If you have any condition that tends to damage the blood vessels, if you're eating foods that damage the blood vessels, so if you eat anything that has a lot of free radicals in it, what might foods that damage the blood vessels be? Those are going to be things with free radicals in them. So if you're eating deep fried foods, if you eat too much sugar, sugar increases inflammation. It suppresses the function of anti-inflammatory compounds, and it increases inflammation by a number of mechanisms, one of which is It increases your level of insulin. Insulin is not a bad thing, but insulin is pro-inflammatory. Insulin stimulates all kinds of compounds. Insulin is important for growth. So insulin's job is to drive sugar into your cells so that you have energy in the cells to do stuff that you want to do. Insulin is also important for causing growth. So insulin, you want insulin to be present, for example. So if you just lifted weights, you just pumped some iron, you want to have some insulin around because the insulin is a growth hormone and it will work together with androgens and estrogen to an extent to increase the size of your muscles. So insulin is not a bad thing. But if you have too much insulin around, for example, if you have type 2 diabetes and you have blood sugar that's just having a hard time getting into the cell, so your body's ramping up the insulin, you're going to have more inflammation. You have more inflammation, you have more coagulability. So anything you can do to regulate your blood sugar, anything you can do to regulate your blood pressure is going to help. So blood pressure, what you got going on there is for whatever reason you have the high blood, you can have high blood pressure for a number of reasons, but, you know, one of them is stress, but one of the things with high blood pressure is you have turbulent blood flow. So when you have, so let's think about, the Natrog River. Okay. I think about the Natrog River because it's right over there.
It's right over there. Right?
I'm pointing to it. So over there.
Wherever. Right.
It's over there. All right. So when it hasn't rained in a few days, the Natchog River goes through the river. There's rocks in the Natchog River, right?
There are many.
Yes, there are many rocks in the Natchog River, but there's not a lot of water going through, and the water's very calm. It kind of goes through. It's a lazy river, and it's very calm. And you're going to get, you always get some erosion of blood vessels whenever you have fluids flowing through, or some erosion of riverbed or stones when you see water flowing through a river. So when it's doing that, you're going to get a minimal amount of erosion, just normal over time, that kind of wear. And it might be a wash. Ha ha ha. It's a river. It's a wash.
Okay.
Because because you're going to have more bringing in of silt. The trees are going to dump down some leaves. So it's going to be able to repair the riverbed. So it's kind of a wash. You know, you have the water flowing through it in a nice rate, but you also have plant matter coming back into the river to replenish the riverbed. Right.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. So now it rains horribly. Well, not horribly, but you have a really big rainstorm. Maybe you have a bunch of big rainstorms. What happens? Now you have turbulent blood flow.
Right.
River rises, but not only that, there's a lot coming from upstream and it's going through the riverbed. And the force of the water, water is a very powerful sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
It really, you know, you see the Grand Canyon?
Made the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, how you think that happened? Right,
right.
Exactly. So it's going to sculpting the little Natchog River, which is over there as well. So if you have a lot of water rushing through, it's going to erode the stones that are there and it's going to carry the soil through. And if it comes through too fast, you're not going to be able to turn over and replenish quickly. So because the water is banging against the riverbed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also banging against the rocks. How do you get those beautiful, smooth rocks that are in rivers?
You tumble them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's because
right.
they're being tumbled because the
right.
water is going
exactly.
over them. In your, it's a very pretty thing, but what is going on to make the rocks look like that is erosion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you don't want that happening in your blood vessels. You want to have endothelium. So the issue is when you have very turbulent blood flow going through your blood vessels, guess what? You get erosion and damage of your endothelium. And your body doesn't like that. So it sees the erosion and, first of all, in the erosion, the actual physical erosion, the beating of turbulent blood flow against the blood vessels causes erosion of the inside of those blood vessels. And you get free radical damage just from the turbulent blood flow. So that's number one. Number two is if you have blood going through and you're not eating perfectly, maybe you're eating French fries, or maybe you're eating too much sugar, or maybe you're drinking too much alcohol, or, you know, there are a variety of things that you might be eating that aren't working for you that are causing inflammation. Maybe you have a food intolerance and you're eating a food intolerance, or maybe you have a condition that makes you inflamed like an autoimmune condition, or even diabetes. So not only do you have turbulent blood flow, but you have compounds inside the blood that this turbulent blood that's beating against the blood vessels, the compounds themselves are also causing damage to the inside of the blood vessels. So this is a bad situation. So any inflammatory condition that you have to work on, because otherwise you get porous blood cells, porous blood vessels. So we want to help you not have leaky blood vessels. So that's, if you learn nothing else today, let's talk about leaky, how do you not have leaky blood vessels? All right. So what we want to do is we want to make sure those blood vessels are strong so they're not porous, so they're nice and elastic, so you have nice tight junctions among the endothelial cells so the virions cannot get through the inside of the endothelium. What is the number one simplest thing you can do to make those blood vessels nice?
Exercise?
You got it.
Hey,
all right.
How did I get
so
that?
So exercise. Exercise is critical. So the sheer stress, so when you are exercising, instead of having turbulent blood flow, you are rhythmically having good laminar. Laminar means in layers. That's what you want. Turbulent versus laminar. Now, two nice vocabulary words you learned today. So turbulent blood flow is what happens when you have inflammation, when you have high blood pressure banging around inside your blood vessels. What you have at Diana's pool, what you have in the Natchog River when there's a lot of water going through, right? That turbulent blood flow, not desirable in your endothelium. What you want to have is laminar flow. What happens when you have a nice calm day in the Natchog River, and also when you're just sitting meditating calmly, also when you exercise, you encourage laminar flow. And the cool thing about the laminar flow during exercise is you get a great turnover of the blood many, many times. So if you then go ahead and you eat all kinds of good stuff to help to repair your blood vessels, you're going to have many, many more times, many more chances for that blood to see all of your blood vessels. So if you eat things that strengthen your blood vessels and encourage nitric oxide production, then as you're exercising, all of your blood vessels are going to see those nutrients many more times as they flow through. So what heals up your blood vessels? Well, one of the things is proanthocyanins. So what's a proanthocyanin?
I don't know. What the heck is that?
Proanthocyanins and proanthocyanins. Yes. Well, out there, we've got these lovely bushes that are taking over because that's what they do. What bushes are those?
The bushes that are taking over?
Yes, the ones that are taking over.
I don't know. We have all sorts of briar bushes out there.
Yes, what are the briar? That's right, the briar bushes.
Raspberries and blackberries.
No, yeah, yes, that's right. Raspberries and blackberries. It's exactly right. So blackberries. So the first year they cut down the trees next to our house, we had blackberries and raspberries and black raspberries and blueberries, and it was great. The next year we had blackberries, and also we had
blackberries.
And we also got blackberries.
Right.
Yeah.
And we'll see what we get this year.
Probably going to be.
They're pretty strong. But,
yes. Yeah. Well, we'll probably have blackberries. Blackberries, unfortunately, are very invasive. But the fortunate thing about the blackberries being invasive is we don't mind that they're there. And there were so many of them, we couldn't eat all of them. And our friends came over and picked some of them.
Right.
And the cool thing about black, if you had to have one berry, it's not a bad one to have. Because you know how they say the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice? Well, the darker the berry, the more anthocyanins it has. So if you eat a lot of blackberries, you're going to get compounds that are wonderful antioxidants and help with the structural integrity of the inside of your blood vessels. So that's your purple produce, any of your purple produce. So blackberries are a big one. Mm-hmm. So raspberries, blueberries, think of some more purple produce. Eggplants, aubergines, which is like a smaller eggplant pretty much.
Isn't there like a purple cauliflower?
Yes, anything that's purple. Mm-hmm. So purple cauliflower, purple kale, purple cabbage. Plums, prunes, grapes, and grapes of any color have some anthocyanins, but are obviously the darker the grape, the more anthocyanins it's going to have. If you're going to eat quinoa is going to have more anthocyanins if it's red or black, I'm not sure if they call it black or purple, but anyway. So if you get rice, you can get red rice, you can get black rice. If you get beans, the darker the beans, they all have anthocyanins in them. Black beans, red beans, pick your reddish, purplish, blackish color of bean. They're all going to have some anthocyanins in it. One of the things that Brian O'Hara explained to me is that so Brian O'Hara is and Brian and Anita, Brian O'Hara and Anita Johnson, they are the owners of Tobacco Road Farms in Lebanon. And one of the cool things that he taught me is that when you have extremely well-nourished produce, they express higher levels of structure and higher levels of features the more healthy they are. So if you have, you know how sometimes you eat a radish and it's not very spicy? Like mm-hmm. if you get it from the supermarket, it's not organic and it's not particularly spicy. You ever have that happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You ever get one of theirs and you bite into it and it's like, whoa, right? And it's okay. super spicy.
Okay.
That's because, you know, they have kind of a Maslow's hierarchy of need too. So it's for basic survival. They're just going to put together their basic nutrition to have their structure. So you simply get a radish. But if they're fat and happy and they're getting all kinds of wonderful nutrients, they're going to be really spicy. So they're going to be expressing a lot more of that spiciness. So a really spicy radish in general, especially if it's an organic, well-raised radish, if it's super spicy, you know that you've got a really good, healthy radish. Likewise, when plants like kale and cabbage and collards express purple pigments. So those plants, at their basic level, they're not even green. And when you let when you pick kale and you let it sit for long enough, it will show yellow because you're going to see the lutein and zeaxanthin carotenoids underneath the chlorophyll. Because if it's not attached to the ground, it can't do photosynthesis anymore, so it can't have chlorophyll. So it turns yellow. But if it's planted in the ground, it's going to do photosynthesis. So now it's going to turn green and you're not going to be able to see the yellow underneath. By the way, that yellow, that lutein, zeaxanthin, wonderful antioxidant, really good for you. Okay, so now you have chlorophyll. But if it's super well nourished, then it might even express purple colors. And because it doesn't need to do that for its survival, but it will because it has the extra nutrients to express higher level healthy genes. And so things that are purple are existing at a high level. And it's so funny that when in Eastern culture, when they developed the chakras, the highest level of chakra was purple. And, you know, people get annoyed at people who are in the holistic health community who are their favorite color is purple because, oh, it's purple everywhere. I know. But I just want to say they have a point because things that are purple in nature are expressing a high level of evolution. They're expressing a high level of gene expression. And things that are purple in nature can save your life. They have wonderful antioxidant properties. Not only that, bees are attracted to purple. Also, bees and other insects that are pollinators can see purple in the ultraviolet range. They can see stuff we can't see. So those plants and flowers that are expressing that color, those animals are going to be attracted to those flowers because, again, not only are they expressing purple, they're expressing ultraviolet, which was an even higher level of evolution. So those bees can see that the ultraviolet in the ultraviolet range. They're going to be attracted to those flowers because they're expressing a high level of healthy genetics. And so they're going to go for that pollen first. How interesting is that?
That's very interesting.
Right? Mm-hmm. I know. So if you want to help strengthen your blood vessels, one of the things to do is get exercise and also to eat your purple produce. Because when you're getting the exercise, you're encouraging laminar flow of the blood vessels. And you're also carrying wonderful antioxidants, if you're eating your purple produce, to the inside of all those blood vessels. Also, laminar flow increases nitric oxide production. Nitric oxide is very desirable in your blood vessels. And one of the things we do naturally to help people who have high blood pressure is to help them to encourage nitric oxide production. Why? Because nitric oxide directly decreases the permeability of your blood vessels. So do anthocyanins by helping with the structure, but the nitric oxide will help to stick those tight junctions back together. So you want to do whatever you can to increase your nitric oxide. So the main thing to do is exercise. In fact, Chris Masterjohn said he thinks that home exercise is critical if you're in lockdown. And I talked about last week how I hate the word lockdown. During the stay-at-home directives, I like directive and I like stay at home. I do not like the term lockdown because the word lockdown...
It sounds like you're in prison.
It sounds like you're in prison and it's not true. We're not locked down. And we're certainly not locked down anymore because they, you know, did phase one of opening up Connecticut. Lockdowns, maybe they used it to scare people, scare and shame people into staying home. But I don't think we need scaring and shaming. It was enough to tell me, you know what? You need to be really careful because there's a virus out there that can kill you. So you might want to stay home more. You might want to physically distance. I respond to direct things that make sense as opposed to things that I don't do well with shame and fear. I don't do well with shame and fear when I'm being coached. I do well with, okay, here's what I want you to do, Fran, and here's why, and hey, you're doing a good job with what you're doing. That works for me. Saying lockdown, that doesn't work for me. That I don't think shame and fear works for anybody, and it's one of the things that are affecting people's mental health right now, I think. So anyway, when you're staying home, you want to figure out ways to exercise. And I always say this to everybody, that you want to figure out ways to exercise indoors, outdoors, and indoors that's away from home, although indoors that's away from home is not a thing right now, really. So right now we're stuck with either outdoors or inside our homes. And you know, when you're not on, but Chris Master John says he thinks that, they should prioritize reopening gyms. He thinks they should be essential businesses and they should be able to safely open during, even lockdowns.
I think you could do it with restrictions.
You would have to do, well, you have to do it with restrictions.
Locker room issue.
Locker room issue and cleaning issue. How would you clean all the equipment all the time? I mean, well, the thing is, when we were in the gym anyway, there was always disinfectant spray that you were expected to use after you were done with your workout.
That would just have to be monitored very carefully. And
right.
You have to be, you know, it would be a requirement that you really clean your machine down well.
Right. I mean, that's already sort of in place. I mean, whenever I use equipment at the gym, I always wipe it down after. They provide you with disinfectant spray, and I always use it, even if I'm just...
It's true, but it's not enforced.
Right. It's true. It is not enforced. Mm-hmm. But, right, it would need to be enforced, and there would probably have to be a procedure also... such that, you know, that staff would go around and do deep cleaning. That would be part of their duties, to just do deep cleaning. But isn't that interesting? This is a guy who's sitting in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And he's all like, we got to get the gyms open. Because exercise will save people's lives.
And this is not just a physical thing. It's a mental thing, too.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Like, you know, the mental health issue is a huge issue.
Oh, for sure. And exercise certainly helps people's mental health. I know that if I don't get out there and get moving, I get more depressed. And I've been struggling with my own mental health during this pandemic. And I know that when I get out and ride my bike, of course, you know, what did I do yesterday? I went out and rode my bike on the Airline Trail. I was outside in the fresh air. It got pretty warm and it was very sunny. And the Airline Trail is green, green, green. And I could feel, I was looking at the green of the trees and the green of the plants. And I could literally feel the green healing I could feel the healing power of the green coming in through my eyes. I could feel it making me feel more peaceful. So please, please spend some time getting outdoors this weekend. There's many things about it that are good. It's the warm, fresh air. It's the sunshine. It's also feasting your eyes on the color green, the natural color green outdoors. It's very healing. It stimulates a part of your brain that calms you down. It lowers cortisol, all kinds of good stuff. Anyway, you need exercise to improve your nitric oxide function and to improve the function of your endothelium. Stick your endothelial cells together so the virus is less likely to get in. All right. And we also talked about purple produce, sticking those endothelial cells together and causing less oxidative damage to the inside of your blood vessels. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about citrulline. So L-citrulline is my buddy. L-citrulline is something that's not terribly expensive. It's less expensive if you buy it in powder form, because you have to kind of take a lot of it. You have to take multiple grams a day of L-citrulline. So what does L-citrulline do? L-citrulline increases the level of L-arginine in your blood. And there are some studies that show that that your L-arginine levels, so arginine is an amino acid that is a nitric oxide enhancer. And why not just take arginine? Because citrulline will raise your L-arginine levels in your blood more than taking L-arginine will. It must be an absorption thing and a pathway thing. But anyway, so you get your citrulline. So what's the funnest thing that L-citrulline is in?
I don't know.
Well, citrulline, do you know what the genus name of watermelon is?
No.
Citrullus.
Oh, okay. Well,
so citrulline is an amino acid that's in watermelon. So
is that why Brian likes watermelon so much?
I think Brian likes watermelon because it tastes good. And he grows really good watermelon with a high level expression. It probably has a lot of L-citrulline in it, including, and by the way, watermelon also has lycopene in it. And lycopene is a wonderful antioxidant that's good for cardiovascular health. It also happens to be good for prostate health and can help to prevent and treat benign prostatic hyperplasia, overgrowth of your prostate, hormonal overgrowth of your prostate, as well as prostate cancer. So I want to say, take a minute and say hi to the people who are listening. Hi, Patty. Hi, Ron. Hi, Monica. Hi, Mark. Hi, Gary. And hi, Lucy in Florida. Woohoo! We have a listener in Florida. How cool is that? Yes.
Oh, look, she just came on.
Yeah.
Yay,
so hi, Lucy. Everybody. Oh, and hi, Francie. Yes, everybody's birding right now, so Francie must be very excited about that. Okay, so anyway, citrulline. I didn't realize. I just learned that citrulline, like in the last week in my studies, did not know that the genus name of watermelon was citrullus. I knew about L-citrulline for a while because I've been taking it, but I didn't know that it's called citrulline because it's the amino acid that's high in watermelon. So, of course, watermelon is not in season all year. You can get watermelons in the store now because they are growing some places. Obviously, if you get local watermelon that is very consciously grown, you're going to have the highest levels of citrulline and lycopene and other antioxidants and carotenoids. If you are, now I struggle with blood pressure a bit, so I am taking high doses of L-citrulline and I stir it into watermelon water. And if I have trouble finding, my issue is that you have to eat a lot of watermelon to get a lot of citrulline. And I am considering getting watermelon powder so I can have watermelon all year. And I will stir in L-citrulline powder, which I will also have all year because I have to treat my blood pressure and I'm trying to avoid taking meds for it. But I do get lots of exercise, so I'm increasing my nitric oxide that way. So other things that can increase your nitric oxide, like we said, the nitric oxide is something that helps to keep the endothelium nice and tight. So other nitric oxide enhancers, a big thing is beet juice. So we say beet juice over beets because there happens to be more of the betalains, which increase your nitric oxide production in the juice. You're just going to get a higher dose of betalains than you are if you just eat beets. Mind you, eat the beets. It's okay. The beets are still going to have the betalains in it. And the more nitric oxide enhancing things you eat, the better off you're going to be. What else?
Every day.
What's that, beets? Yes, yeah. That's right. We have some grated beets every day. We sure do. In our salad. Mm-hmm. We have a garlic. Now, unfortunately, I'm one of those unfortunate people that I can't do alliums. I can't do the things in the lily family because they give me a stomachache. But if that's not you and you don't mind having garlic breath, have at it, because garlic, you know how they're saying garlic doesn't cure coronavirus. I know. Nothing is proven yet double-blind placebo-controlled.
Right.
They're working on remdesivir, that drug. There's good studies on it, and it's looking more and more promising. But we can't say anything is 100%. But yes, go ahead.
I will say, though, what garlic will do for you is it will keep people 6 feet away from you.
Yeah.
Ah!
Okay.
There you go.
If you don't want to stink from garlic, because you can take garlic, you can eat garlic, you can eat like a garlic clove, or you can eat a whole bulb of garlic a day if you want to, and that will help. That's going to thin your blood also and keep you from clotting as much. And it also is antimicrobial. Will it definitely kill the coronavirus? We don't know that for sure. It will probably do some damage to it. But it will increase your nitric oxide and help lower your blood vessels. Blood pressure, we know that that's true. You can also take garlic in pills. And if you take high-level allicin, it's spelled A-L-L-I-C-I-N because garlic, the onion garlic family, it's not a family, it's a genus, They're all lilies. It's the Liliaceae family, but the genus that garlic is in is the alliums. So Allium sepa, Allium sativa. Allium sepa is onions and Allium sativa is garlic. And if you're like, oh, that's like cannabis sativa. Well, yes, it is. But I don't mean to bore you, but sativa just means cultivated. It's not an exciting. We think of sativa because the only time we hear it is when we say cannabis sativa. But it's just a Latin word that means cultivated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of this and that and the other thing sativa. But Allium sativa is garlic. And Allium sepa is onions. And Allium, I don't know off the top of my head what leeks and chives and shallots. They're all Alliums, but they have different species names. But they all are going to be helpful in increasing your nitric oxide. Animal protein. If you're going to eat animal protein, just make sure that if you're eating beef, that it's grass-fed, that it's pork, it's cleanly raised, that it's free-range chicken that's been given a healthful diet and it's allowed to run around and eat bugs and eat ticks for you. Dark chocolate. Try not to eat too much sugar with your chocolate. Dark chocolate should be at least 70%. If it's sugar-free, that's even better. So if you're eating organic cocoa nibs or organic roasted cocoa beans or using non-dutched, non-alkalized cocoa powder, that's even better. Increases nitric oxide. I have supplements that have cocoa as one of the ingredients to help you with your blood pressure. Leafy greens, because leafy greens are going to have all kinds of cool stuff in it. Great antioxidants, other nitric oxide promoting compounds. Citrus fruits they promote nitric oxide as well. Pomegranate is another good one. Nuts and seeds, of course, watermelon, and also red wine. Red wine has resveratrol in it, so red wine is going to, and red wine's in grape juice and grapes. They're going to have resveratrol in it, which is going to be a great antioxidant for you. It's going to help to protect your endothelium, and it's also it also enhances nitric oxide function. So as I said, citrulline raises your arginine more than arginine itself.
How about dark chocolate?
Yeah, I said that.
Oh, you did? Oh, I missed
that. Yes. Yes. So if you're going to eat chocolate, you want it to be at least 70%. The less sugar, the better. If you can find chocolate that's even higher percentage, you can get chocolate bars that have 80-90% chocolate in them.
I know.
They're pretty bitter.
They are.
But,
they're
you know.
It's like Baker's chocolate.
Yeah.
It's so bitter. But they're really good.
But you have to be careful with Baker's chocolate because you want to look to see that it hasn't been alkalized because that reduces the amount of the cocoa flavanols. And you want the cocoa flavanols to help you to help you with your nitric oxide function. And if your chocolate has been Dutched or if there's less than 70% chocolate in your bar, you're not going to have as much flavanol benefit. So zinc and other antioxidants stabilize the enzyme that's responsible for producing nitric oxide. So zinc is not just antiviral. It also helps to stabilize the enzyme that makes your nitric oxide for you. So that's really helpful too. So zinc, we've been talking about zinc is something you want to make sure you have enough of, and you can take zinc in supplements. If you're taking zinc, you want to make sure that you have a supplement that zinc can give you a bad tummy. It can give you a stomach ache. And, you wanted to see if you can find a lozenge that doesn't give you a bad tummy. I find that if I take a food form zinc, if it's complexed with foods, doesn't bother my stomach as much. The other thing you can try is if you have a cheap zinc and it does give you an upset tummy, is swallow it with some ginger ale, ginger beer, candied ginger, some kind of ginger. By the way, the ginger is a good thing because it does calm the inflammasomes that the virus causes to be very active. And it also is a cytokine calmer, so it can help to protect the cytokine source. So ginger is something you should have on board anyway. But if you take ginger with your zinc, you might not get a bad tummy. So we already talked about the purple produce and the anthocyanins. See if there's anything that I forgot to say. I said the red and purple grapes, the plums and prunes, blackberries, raspberries, blueberries, purple cabbage, purple kale, eggplant, black beans, black, red, and wild rice. By the way, black and red rice are not the same thing as wild rice. Wild rice is actually a different plant. They just call it wild rice because it kind of looks like rice and it functions like rice, but it's not actually the same plant. Both gluten-free. All right. Also, purple potatoes. You can get potatoes that are purple.
Yes,
and again, that's a high level of genetic expression.
Purple radishes.
Yes, purple. You're absolutely right. Purple radishes, mm-hmm. pomegranate, elderberry. So all that elderberry that you've been taking, I know there's a controversy about it. By the way, Chris Masterjohn says he looked at the meta-analysis and the way that elderberry increases cytokines is not going to be enough to counter. It doesn't significantly increase cytokines to the level that it's going to bring on a cytokine storm. That it's much better to take it because of its antioxidant protection. It's going to help with your nitric oxide. And it's also, its antiviral activities far outweigh its cytokine levels. The way that it increases the cytokine activity is not enough to give you a cytokine storm. So it is worth taking. I'm taking elderberry. So I'm a fan of the elderberry for many reasons. Bilberry and huckleberry. So bilberry and huckleberry, they're going to be smaller. Did you used to go picking the huckleberries down at the farm?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And they're different than blueberries, right?
They're a low ground shrub.
Very low. But the thing is, you have European blueberries, which are very high bush, mm-hmm. and they're big fat ones. Those are cultivated. But right. The wild blueberries that we used to get in Newfoundland, that we used to pick there, those were the low bush ones. And you can pick those in Maine, you know, northern New England and right. into Atlantic Canada, that you get the low bush blueberries. And I'm not sure which is the difference between, like, I have to see a difference in a plant between a low bush blueberry and a Vaccinium myrtillus, which is going to be your bilberry, huckleberry kind of deal. And when you buy tinctures a lot of times from herbal companies, it'll say Vaccinium spp, which means SPP. It's Vaccinium species. So there'll be several Vacciniums in there. By the way, Vaccinium is the genus name for a bunch of wonderful high antioxidant berries in the heather family, Ericaceae. So the heather, you know, Heathcliff, Catherine, Heathcliff. And if you get points if you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so anyway, blueberries are in the heather family and bilberries. Also, cranberries are a Vaccinium. Cranberries are Vaccinium macrocarpon. And something we call partridge berry in Newfoundland, but it's not called that down here. It's called other places in Nova Scotia. That was what they called. Squawberry. I'm not sure. Maybe wolfberry. That's what they called it in Nova Scotia. Down here, we call it lingonberry. And I don't know that it grows so much in Connecticut, but it definitely grew in Newfoundland. It's very popular, and they called it partridge berry. Partridge berry is something else, like they'll also known as squavine here. But up there, partridge berry is Vaccinium. It's Vaccinium vitis ideus. And they all are high in anthocyanins, and they're all really good for you. Partridge berry, and partridge berry is so popular up there, you can get jam from it. It tastes like a cranberry, but it's not quite as sour as a cranberry. And you could get it in jam. And when the partridge berries was out, you can get partridge berry anything. Partridge berry muffins. You go to Tim Hortons, you can get the partridge berry muffins. So it was really good stuff. But anyway, if you can find partridge berries, which are lingonberries down here, they're going to help you with your antioxidants. By the way, cranberries and cherries. Also, goji berries. Goji berries are an easy thing to find at health food stores. And you can get goji berry juice. Great for your immune system. Also really high in antioxidants. All right. So, and then cherries. Did I mention cherries? Cherries are starting to come out. I'm starting to see cherries in the store. Also really high in anthocyanins. You're going to have, you actually have more anthocyanins in Bing cherries than you do in tart cherry. Everybody got all excited about the tart cherries and a lot of studies are done on it. And yes, they do have anthocyanins, but like we said, the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice, the darker the cherry, the more anthocyanins it's going to have. So find yourself some nice Bing cherries, better if they're organic and they don't have pesticides on them. So there you go. Okay. So, That's the big take home here is we want to make sure your endothelium has nice tight junctions in it so that the virus can't get between the cells, damage the pericytes, and therefore not allow the pericytes to maintain the elastic integrity of your blood vessels. And you do that by exercising, by consuming things that are high in nitric oxide, like beets and beet juice and watermelon juice, and taking L-citrulline. Citrulline is in watermelon already. And all of the, and as we said, pomegranate, leafy greens, dark chocolate, garlic, animal protein, nuts and seeds, wine and grapes. And then your dark purple stuff is going to help prevent the oxidative damage of the inside of your blood vessels. All right. So let's talk for a minute about angiotensin converting enzyme 2. So angiotensin converting enzyme. So you have this situation, you have the angiotensin, the renin-angiotensin system, which exists mostly in your kidneys, but it also exists in your cardiovascular system. And there are angiotensin converting enzyme 2 receptors in your lungs. And the problem with the angiotensin converting enzyme 2 receptors is that that is a site where this coronavirus likes to bond. So we get concerned about it when there's more angiotensin converting enzyme two receptor sites, because we're concerned that that's where the spike protein of the coronavirus can bond. Anyway, so one of the things that we know about the, as we study more and more about this awful virus, is we know that it's harder on men than it is on women. That women, that when you go to the hospitals, the difference in census between men and women is dramatic. It's like almost 70% men versus 20-ish% women. That, and it's not entirely explained by hormones, that they're not entirely clear about why it might be. There's a decline in ACE2 expression. It's greater in males than females, but it doesn't explain why men tend to get more serious disease than women. So as you age, you don't express angiotensin converting enzyme 2 as much. So the difference, so this is all this stuff that I learned, my goodness. So you see, you have angiotensin converting enzyme 1 and angiotensin converting enzyme 2. So the renin angiotensin system, so renin gets converted to angiotensin 1, which gets converted to angiotensin 2, which gets converted to aldosterone. Aldosterone makes you hold on to sodium, which makes you hold on to water. So if the kidneys are not getting adequately perfused, they're not getting enough blood through them, they're going to make you hold on to sodium, which is going to make you hold on to water. So the kidneys get their water. The kidneys do not like to not have their water. Hat tip to Anna McIntosh. May she rest in peace. She was my professor at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine. And she taught me about how the kidneys need their water, and she explained that whole system to me. All right, I didn't realize that in the renin-angiotensin system, you're basically talking about angiotensin-converting enzyme 1. That's in the renin-angiotensin system. Angiotensin-converting enzyme 2 converts angiotensin 2 to other compounds. It converts it to ACE with a 7 in it, and it doesn't, and what it does is, so when you have an increase in aldosterone, you have an increase in your blood pressure. Angiotensin converting enzyme 2 will take angiotensin 2 and convert it to other compounds that moderate your blood pressure. So it's actually a feedback system. So it's not a bad thing. As it happens, there are ACE2 receptors in your lungs, which regulate the pressure that goes through your lungs. Because there's all these places that you need to have a regulation of blood pressure. So you have these receptors in your lungs, you have them in your kidneys, and you have them in your cardiovascular tissue, obviously. So its studies show that ACE2 expression, you don't get as much ACE2 in men as they age, but it doesn't explain why men tend to get more serious disease. So there was also a study on ACEs and ARBs. So angiotensin converting enzyme, ACE inhibitors, and ARBs, which are angiotensin receptor blockers. Those are drugs that are used for blood pressure. So ultimately, there was a collaborative study from 4 different medical schools in the U.S. and Asia. You know how we were concerned that those drugs increase the expression of angiotensin converting enzyme, ACE2 receptors. It turns out that they don't appreciably, okay? So this is what I understood. All the drugs do increase the mRNA expression, messenger RNA. So they do increase the expression of the ACE2 receptor. They don't increase their activity, and they're not the same thing. So if you have a receptor, in order for there to be more ACE2 activity or bonding to the receptor, you have to have activity in that receptor. Because they don't increase the activity, even though there's more receptors, you don't have to worry about excessive bonding of the virus. So they don't increase the expression or activity of ACE2 in the airway specifically. Because that's where you're worried about it. You're worried about the overexpression in the airway because the ACE2 receptor is bonded in the airway, and that's where you get your the virus bonds there, and that's where you get more of your damage, and that's part of what causes the hypoxia and the ARDS, the SARS, respiratory distress. So anyway, the ACE inhibitors and the ARBs don't increase expression or activity of ACE2 receptors in the airway. So if you're taking an ACE inhibitor, and here's a list of ACE inhibitors just so you can hear, if you're taking one of these, lisinopril, anything that ends in pril, basically, lisinopril, captopril, enalapril, benazepril, ramipril, quinapril, pretty much stuff that ends in pril. So if you're not sure, take a look at your blood pressure medication and see what it says on the bottle. And it should say one of those things. If you're taking one of those things successfully, don't worry about it. Stuff that ends in artan, those are going to be your ARBs. Losartan, olmesartan, irbesartan, valsartan, telmisartan. Stuff that ends with sartan. If you're taking an ACE inhibitor or an ARB for your blood pressure, according to these studies, it's okay to keep taking it because it's not going to increase your ACE2 activity in your lungs. And in fact, if you're taking it successfully, it's lowering your blood pressure. You want to keep taking it because you want to keep your blood pressure down. High blood pressure decreases your nitric oxide activity. Remember how we talked about the turbulent blood flow bangs against your blood vessel walls and causes leaky blood vessels. We don't want you to have leaky blood vessels. So if you're on a blood pressure medication and it's successfully keeping your blood pressure down, it's a good idea to keep taking it, as far as what I'm understanding. So you're unlikely to get more serious disease if you stop taking the drugs. They may in fact be protective because high blood pressure makes the blood vessels less elastic and more porous, and therefore more likely to have endothelial damage. The damage makes it more likely for a virus to get in, damage the pericytes, and therefore reduce elasticity of the blood vessels and increasing the chance for clots. There you go. Whatever you need to do to keep your blood pressure down.
It was like a lot of information.
I know, right?
Well, yeah. Remember, you can always go back and watch this again if you missed some of the information that Fran is talking about right now.
I know. I really do have to go. So thank you so much for listening on this Memorial Day weekend. I hope you have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. And it's not going to be such a great day today, but do get outside. Try to get outside all 3 days. Definitely get outside tomorrow and Monday. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. I hope I, at appropriate social distance, I hope I get to see some of you. Take care.
Happy Memorial Day.
Yeah.